The river is high and the sand eyes are sinking low. Whoa, they rock in the cradle. The someday the rock will by and roll out the red carpet on the edge of a life. And we'll snake the blue river and rejoice in style. Break out a bottle of fine doping wine and raise pain down in the little town.
And this is WUSB in Stony Brook. Emmanuel Goldstein back with you after rampaging through Europe for the last 3 weeks or so. And I got to tell you, you know, it really kind of changes you going around to the rest of the world, seeing how people live, seeing how people treat Americans, seeing how this country is viewed in the rest of the world. Firing a gun for the first time in my life, you know, things like that have changed me, turned me into a different kind of person. I think it's about time, you know. I think it's about time there's been some changes. You know, we all make mistakes. We all get led down the wrong road at some times. And that's why I'm, first of all, renaming the program the Patriot Hour, because, well, we don't have one on this radio station, and it's about time we did. It's about time people got the truth, got to hear something about the way things really are, you know. People just do not respect Americans in other parts of the world, and I think it's high time that we got them to do that one way or another. All right? It's I don't know what we have to do. Obviously, force doesn't seem to work. Maybe just talking a little bit louder and slower works. You know, it seems to work in most cases when you're trying to find out where the McDonald's is. I had so many experiences, I just cannot even begin to relate them. Where people, they find out you're American, and all of a sudden they treat you differently. All of a sudden, they get that look in their eyes. You know what the look is. We've all experienced it. Yeah. I had one customs guy in Spain, refer to me as an Americano. Americano. Can you believe what an insult that is? I looked the guy straight in the face. I said, look, buddy, we don't speak that kind of language here, all right? Learn the language, all right? Don't be ignorant. It's American. American, spelled USA. I got to apologize if there's any anger in my voice. I don't mean to come back here and start spouting and being all upset and that kind of thing. You know, self-righteous indignation. No, we don't need that. But we do need to wake up a little bit. You know, we need to wake up and see just how we're so much better here. You know, the way things are going. The way the policy. You look at George W. Bush and right there you see a man that... Can't do it. Oh, God. I'm sorry. I thought I could make it through the hour. I did this once before where I went on a conservative rampage, and it worked. You know, it worked well, but I just shouldn't have brought George W. Bush into it. Oh, I was doing so good up until then. I had a great time in Europe. The people there are great. They're amazing. They treat you like you would not believe. And, you know, if I were them, I would not be treating us with that kind of respect. No way. No way, Jose. It's simply unbelievable how friendly they all are after the things that we're doing. And by we, you know, I mean the government that allegedly represents us. And yes, they sure do represent us now because this time they were elected. And wow. I talked to a lot of people in the various places I went to. I went to Portugal, Spain, Andorra. Yes, there is such a place. And they don't have blue heads and antenna. Don't worry about that. France, Germany, and Holland, and so many places people just want to know what's going on over here. They're afraid to come to this country. They're afraid of the things that are happening, the news stories that they hear. And it's hard. It's hard to convince them otherwise, that things actually aren't so bad. I mean, they are, you know, they're getting there. They're getting there. There's all kinds of madness happening. all kinds of invasion of privacy and suspension of constitutional rights and things like that. But, you know, nothing compares to what we're doing to the rest of the world as far as invading countries and occupying them and things like that. And you just have to wonder where that's all going. I think most people realize that this country is comprised of individuals, free-thinking people, and as long as the communication lines remain open, we have a chance. We have a chance of not only changing things, but also staying on good terms with most people in the rest of the world, because I think most people get it. Most people realize that it's not one unilateral voice that we're all speaking with here. At least I sure hope so. But yeah, I had a great time. Went all throughout the place. Saw some places for the first time, like Spain and Portugal. Wow, what amazing countries those are. And probably my favorite place is Barcelona. And I'll certainly be getting into some more detail about that. If you've ever been there, maybe we can share some experiences later when we open up the phones. The program is Off the Wall. No, it's not the Patriot Hour. I could have gotten away with that for a little while, but not this week anyway. Off the Wall, back with you on the air for the foreseeable future. One part about what I said, though, was true. I did fire a gun. I'm going to get into that a little bit, too. No, it wasn't in anger or anything like that, but it was definitely an eye-opening experience. About the only thing I think that really upset me most of my whole trip was the guy on the plane back who stole my seat. Yeah, you know how on top of the baggage compartment things, they have the little letters that indicate where you're supposed to sit, and I was sitting in seat 25L. That's it, 25L. And the way they had it, represented, they had, like, the letters, LKJ, in reverse order. It doesn't mean Lyndon Kwesi Johnson, it means basically JKL, but they decided to do it stupidly. And they had a little wavy line next to the L, and they had a human being standing next to the K, the J, rather. Now, this guy told me that I was in his seat because I was sitting by the window. I maintain, though, that despite the fact that it was in reverse order, that the little wavy line means a window, and the human being means the aisle. That's international language there. But you know what? I didn't argue. I didn't argue. Because I figured, okay, fine, you know, I don't get a window, but at least I can, you know, go to the bathroom as many times as I want without having to crawl over somebody. Because, you know, Continental Airlines, which is the airline I was flying, they have less space, I think, than any airplane I've ever used in my life. The whole trip, your knees are touching the seat in front of you. And, of course, the person in front of you has to recline fully. So, you know, your knees are, like, up above your head at some points. It's crazy. It's a crazy situation. So I didn't complain. I sat there in my aisle seat. But then, you know, the bonehead decides that he's going to keep the shade closed the whole time, even on landing. Everybody else has got their shade up. But this is the one guy who I decided to cave into. He decides, no, I'm not going to allow access to the outside world. Why do you even want a window seat if you're going to keep it closed the whole time? Why? And, you know, I guess it makes sense that I would be this infuriated and outraged at the last part of my trip on the way back to New York, you know? Because the rest of it was bliss. The rest of it was great. But as soon as I started interacting with Americans again, that's where it all starts to fall apart. And I just kept it all bottled up inside. I was prepared to, you know, unleash it on the customs people who harassed me when I arrived, but they never did. They never harassed me, and I got through okay. And boy, that was pretty amazing. We have a special guest with us today. Red Hack is here from the other radio show.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Came all the way in from Columbia.
Yeah.
Got any... Columbia University.
Yeah, not the country.
Oh, okay. Strike the next question. okay. Well, every time you come out here, it seems to snow, and it's snowing now.
Yeah.
I like snow. I miss the snowstorm that happened here while I was away. I was kind of upset by that. And so far, it's been a big disappointment since I've gotten back. It's been nothing but above freezing temperatures. And I hear it's going to get into the 60s Fahrenheit, which is insane.
Enjoy the snow while it lasts.
Well, it's not really lasting. It's kind of melting as soon as it hits the ground. But it's, you know, it's kind of interesting. But yeah, I hope for a hard, long winter, as I always do. Mm. Last winter, I got it. Last winter, I was snowbound, and all kinds of car got stuck for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool. So, you've been traveling?
No, not lately.
Huh?
No travel plans. I might go to Canada.
You want to go to Canada this weekend?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's go to Canada this weekend. The reason I want to go to Canada, I don't know quite why you want to go to Canada, but I want to go to Canada to test drive a smart car.
Sounds like a plan.
It's a good plan because they sell the smart cars openly and without shame in Canada. All right, here you have to meet in alleyways and pay double the price to get some company out in California to retrofit it, and maybe in a few months you'll see one after you give them money. But in Canada, you can actually buy the thing immediately. And I think they only have the diesel version, which gets 70 miles to the gallon, if you can live with that. I'm running into a few possible problems. Obviously, I want to do sort of a similar thing to what I did with my Canadian satellite dish, get something up there and bring it back into this country. Now, I know that you can't license a diesel car, for one thing, in New York. You can in New Jersey, you can in Connecticut, you can everywhere else, I think, except New York and California. The bigger question is whether or not I can actually license this car at all, because it's a Canadian model, and they don't make the American model, unfortunately. There's no real difference in the car itself, but it's a metric system. They use liters on the gauges. You know, little things like that mean I probably will have to license the thing in Canada. I'll probably have to use an address up there. I'll probably have to insure it up there. And this is kind of like a fact-finding mission. This trip that we just planned in the last 2 minutes is a fact-finding mission to go up there and see if I can actually buy one of these things and insure it with an American driver's license. I understand that you can exchange your American license for a Canadian license. That's not quite what I had in mind, though. I don't want to give away my American license. I'd like to have both. But failing that, if it's possible to license the thing with a New York driver's license, that would be really cool. If anyone out there knows anything about this, and if you want to see what a smart car looks like, www.smart.com, just kind of a really crazy-looking two-seater car that they have all over Europe and now Canada and pretty much everywhere except here, as always. www.smart.com has all the information. But email us, otw@2600.com, if you have any insight on that.
They're very small cars. I mean, it's amazing that it's taking this long to get to the U.S., because we saw them last year in Germany. So I guess it's a long process.
We saw them years ago.
I didn't see them.
That's right. You didn't see them, but they've been in Europe for quite some time now. And, you know, they are small. They're a two-seater car, but if you look on the inside, it's actually quite spacey for the person who's driving and for the passenger, because there's no other people. That's why they get all that space. But it looks like a car that's kind of chopped in half.
That kind of thing doesn't really sell here, though. Most people want, you know, an 8-seater that can move a mountain.
Yeah, you know, I look at it as sort of a political statement. If I drive this little tiny smart car on the expressway, and there's this big, humongous two-story SUV in back of me, I'm sort of, you know, giving that person the finger in many ways, including the way that I probably will be doing in real life. And, you know, I think it's high time that we start thinking about maybe being a little more fuel efficient, you know? I remember the gas crisis. You're too young for this, but the gas crisis in the 70s, when this whole thing first started to fall apart. I think gas was something like a quarter a gallon before that crisis hit. And then it started rising up, and people were thinking, oh, maybe it's going to go as far as a dollar a gallon someday. But what people did at that point in time was they bought small cars. They bought foreign cars. That's when fuel-efficient cars started to actually gain a foothold in this country. And the big cars, they began to not be made as much. You didn't see as many of them. This time, though, and yes, it is a crisis because we have gas over $2 a gallon now. This time you have bigger cars than ever with less gas mileage than have ever been conceived of before. It's like some kind of stupid, in-your-face type of mentality that only serves to hurt you if you drive one of these things. I think, you know, if you can get by with a two-seater, and they also make a four-seater, too, which looks kind of cool, get something that gets good gas mileage, for God's sake. You know, think of the rest of the world.
No, we got to show the world who's boss.
We've got to show the world who's stupid. Because really, you know, it only hurts the people who have to. I see people crying at the gas pumps. I do, filling up these SUVs. They spend over $50 just to fill them up. You know,
and then they fill it up the next day too.
And they have to. Yeah, I have no sympathy for them. No sympathy at all. At least use mass transit. What little we have here, you know, do something fuel efficient. But yeah, it's all about putting as much in as possible. But if you're a human being, putting as much into your stomach as possible, or if you're driving, putting as much into your vehicle as possible. That's what Americans, unfortunately, are becoming known for. And it's not necessary, you know. It's really not necessary. I don't get it. I don't understand this need. Just because, you know, you're able to shovel more into you than other people or have the biggest car, it doesn't make you stronger. In fact, it makes you weaker. And pretty much makes the rest of the world laugh.
Yeah, I laugh.
The world needs laughter. I'll give you that. I wasn't lying before when I said I fired a gun for the first time. I do want to tell that story because it's not the kind of thing I expected I would be doing, but I wound up in Amsterdam with some friends of mine. Yeah, you know Hanukkah and Sasha?
Yeah.
They've been in this studio, in fact. How do you say this in the politically correct way? You don't say gun nuts because that's wrong. They're not gun nuts. Gun enthusiasts, I guess, is one thing you'd say, and that's probably correct because basically it's completely different than the way it is here in this country. There, it's done with a very generous dose of sanity, the whole gun culture. People who have guns in their homes are not allowed to keep them loaded. And if somebody breaks into your house, it's not considered acceptable to shoot them. Really, in this country, well, what's the problem? They broke into my house. I got to shoot them.
Self-defense.
The self-defense argument falls flat on me because unless you're walking around packing every time you go to the bathroom or the kitchen or whatever, you know, odds are the break-in is going to occur when you don't have your hand on your gun, so it's really going to be kind of pointless, and in fact, it might even be more dangerous because someone's going to go and find it and use it against you or whatever, or somebody in your household could find it. It makes a lot more sense to me to have it done in this way. It makes even more sense to have your guns at the shooting range, which is where you're going to be using them, or if you're a hunter in, I guess, a properly locked-up area where you have access to it when you're hunting.
Well, generally, you don't hunt with pistols.
No, you don't hunt with pistols unless you're hunting human.
Yeah.
I just got a sense that these people understand that these things are dangerous and that they don't really buy you any freedom. They're simply, you know, tools. They're, you know, like hammers or screwdrivers or things like that. You use them in the appropriate environment and you make sure that they're used safely. A lot more dangerous than hammers and screwdrivers, though. So anyway, I went to the shooting range with my friends and an American friend too. I really didn't know what to expect. I really did not know what to expect. It was kind of scary. It was very scary, in fact. I've never held a gun in my life. I didn't really understand the point of doing this because I don't really, you know, I'm not into the whole culture to start with. But I figured, you know, if I'm going to sit here and speak about guns at any stage, maybe I should know something about, you know, what it's like, what it feels like. Maybe there is some kind of, you know, rush that takes over and turns you into Rush Limbaugh if you touch one of these things. I don't know, you know, until I try it. I feel that people need to try the things that they criticize. That way they sort of have a right to criticize them or at least understand them better. But it was still scary. Have you ever done this? Have you ever actually...
I've shot rifles and shotguns, but never a pistol. Uh-huh. I think it's a little... It's more difficult to shoot a pistol in New York than the other two. Uh-huh. Because I think with a pistol, you need to have a license.
Well, you're talking about the laws, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
well,
yeah.
I mean, no, but with, like, a rifle, I mean, you can shoot one when you're, like, 12 and...
Uh-huh.
You know, there's not really as much.
But they frown upon you shooting it, you know, down your local street.
Well, no, basically. I mean, at targets on shooting
at targets, yeah. And that's another thing. The targets. What do the targets look like?
For rifles, they're bullseyes. I think for pistols, they're humans, right?
Yeah, now that is
yeah.
sick. That is, you don't realize how sick it is until you go over to another country and you realize that that sort of thing is really pretty much unheard of. Because why would you be firing at a human being? What logic is there behind that unless you really are firing at human beings?
Right.
Now, well, in this country, you know, we think, okay, fine, you know, fire at human beings because they're going to fire at you. And that's sort of the mentality we have now. But there, it's not quite the same mentality. They're doing it for skill. They're doing it for target practice and possibly hunting.
Well, really, I mean, pistols are generally used, I think, for shooting at people. Because with a, you know, they don't, I mean, I don't know, I've never shot a pistol, but I don't think they have a sight on them. They don't have, I mean, how do you accurately fire? I mean, I guess you just learn how
there's
to
a,
point
there's
it
a,
correctly.
There's a little, and I'm getting all the technical things wrong, but there's a little ridge that pops up between two other ridges, and
yeah,
you get
sight.
That, you get, yeah, you get that in the center, and bang.
Yeah.
You shoot. And, you know, the one good thing about having me shoot is that I could keep using the same target over and over again, because whenever it came back, it was always completely devoid of holes.
Right.
And one other thing that I suck at, that's you know, what I learned there. Let me just say, I'm very impressed with the safety that that people undergo there. They're very careful. They check to make sure every gun is unloaded before going to get the targets. They make sure they're never pointed at a person. They're very strict about this. Of course, they weren't strict enough to do a background check on me before I went in there. But I guess, you know, if someone vouches for you, that's good enough.
Yeah, when I would shoot a rifle, I mean, here, I did it when I was in the scouts at like summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, you know.
Why do scouts have to shoot guns?
They have merit badges and things to do with shooting. Anyway,
they shoot the merit badges?
No, they shoot the targets.
See,
or cans.
I can support
on the
that. All right,
but I mean, it was very safe. You know, everyone had to wear head. You know, the ear muffs and the glass. The
yeah,
glasses.
We had to wear goggles and headphones.
And you know, nobody got up until all six of rounds were fired or whatever. And you know, it was. I mean, it was. People follow safety precautions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I just got the sense here that everybody knew what the precautions were and that they took it very seriously. And, you know, that's probably the case in most shooting ranges anyway, but I just was impressed by that.
Yeah.
And that sort of made me feel a little better about it. But actually, standing there, first I had a 22 caliber and then a 9mm. I mean, I know the difference between a safety. I do know the 9mm was pretty loud and had a good kick on it when you fired. It's just a very strange feeling standing there, and you feel the power of this thing. You pull the trigger, and wow, it is fast and powerful and dangerous. And it's something that sticks with you. And, of course, you know, I did this the day before I left. And as we're leaving the place, as we're leaving the range, someone mentions to me, oh, by the way, you have gunpowder all over you now, so you might get stopped by airport security. I'm like, oh, great, this is going to be fun, you know, explaining why I have all this gunpowder all over me. But that didn't happen, fortunately. They didn't stop me. But if they had, I imagine I would have had another story to tell.
Yeah, if you really want to feel a strong kick, try shooting a shotgun at clay pigeons.
Well, yeah, you know,
those things hurt.
I can imagine they do. Having done this and gone through the entire experience of shooting for the first time, though, I can say I feel stronger than I've ever felt about my interpretation of gun control. Now, when people say gun control, I don't know where this comes from, but they assume that people who are for gun control are for banning guns, you know, and for just outlawing them at all times. And nothing could be further from the truth. Target shooting is a valid sport, and certainly if you're a hunter, you need certain types of weaponry to hunt with. And that's pretty much, you know, as far as I can see the practical uses for these things. Everything else I see as a danger. I cannot, for the life of me, after handling these things, imagine how anybody in their right mind could keep something like that in their house. I mean, these things are so dangerous, so powerful, so deadly. I mean, take a good look at what you have there and ask yourself if you really want that kind of machinery just sitting around, especially if it's loaded. I mean, unloaded is one thing, but loaded, my God. So after having, you know, touched the things, handled them, and fired them, I feel a little comforted that I still believe in the things I believe in, and now I feel like I might have a right to actually say these things and be listened to.
Yeah. I also like the gun enthusiasts who, you know, don't like the idea of assault weapons bans, because I don't... What do you need an assault weapon
yeah.
for? You're going to, you know, rip a deer in half with it.
Well, you know what, Red Hack, you know what you need it for. It's when the government turns bad.
Right. You got to defend your country.
You got to defend your country. But the thing I always ask these people, I say, well, you know what? I think the country's turned bad now, you know? What do? We line up tomorrow morning? When do we start? When does the revolution to take back the government start? And, of course, you know, you never quite get agreement on that. That's the thing. Things would get so much worse than they are now, so much worse. And you'll still have people that will say, no, you can't do that. This is not the time. It's not going to be a unified thing. And you'll wind up shooting each other. That's what it always winds up being. And even if you did all get together and say, yeah, now we're going to raid the Capitol tomorrow at dawn, you know, they have much bigger guns. And they have a lot more that we will never have. It's a stupid reason, stupid rationale, something that's woefully outdated, might have worked back in the 1700s, does not work now. So find another reason to... say why you have the right to these crazy amounts of weaponry.
And I don't think they'd be afraid to use it because, I mean, I'm just remembering a bit of history. I don't remember which president it was, but there were a bunch of veterans who were camping out near the White House. This was back in, I think, the early 1900s. And they wanted to be paid something, you know, veterans' dues or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the government hadn't been paying them. And so they were there, and, you know, they were just set up this shanty town and just to protest this. And, you know, the president ended up sending out the military with, like, tear gas and all this to chase these veterans away because, you know, I guess they were bothering him. I think it was Hoover. I'm not sure, though.
Okay.
But, so, you know... A revolution, I'm sure they'd use their weapons against us, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are all kinds of reasons to use weapons in various scenarios, but you have to ask yourself, are you hopelessly outnumbered? You know, there are people in Puerto Rico, obviously, that feel that the United States is occupying their territory. Well, if you believe in the right to bear arms and all that kind of nonsense, then these people should be firing on U.S. forces down there right now.
They'd be terrorists.
They'd be terrorists then if they did that. So, you know, you got to ask yourself, well, when does it make sense? When doesn't it make sense? And are we ever going to be totally in agreement on this? Anyway, so that's my experience with... I didn't expect to have a gun experience over there, but I'm glad I did. I learned a lot. Very impressed by the operation, and I don't think I'll be doing it again, though. I don't know. Maybe I'll... first of all, I suck at this, and I have to spend a lot of time practicing. I'm amazed at how good our Dutch friends are. They really spent a lot of time practicing.
Yeah.
It's a good skill. It's a good skill to have.
Maybe I'll have to ask them for a trial when I'm over there.
Well, I recommend it. I do.
Yeah.
It's something I think everybody should do. But I also think everybody should do LSD. You know, that's just me. I think people should experience new and different things. And I try to do that every time I go someplace. You know, sometimes it's one direction, sometimes it's another direction. But that's really the only way you learn is by exploring, experiencing, that kind of thing. It's funny, you know, we're going to get the letters about the LSD part, not about the guns. Guys, you know, I think guns are a lot more deadly than LSD. But that's just me.
LSD doesn't actually have any physical side effects.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, if you jump off a roof when you're on it, that's sort of a physical side effect. Okay, we're going to take phone calls in a little while. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Not just yet, but soon, very soon. And if you're listening online, keep in mind that you're delayed by at least a couple of minutes. So you might want to anticipate when I actually say we're taking phone calls. So I was in various cities I've never been in before. Lisbon is a very nice old city, the capital of Portugal. Very hilly, mountainous, that kind of thing, and just so nice. All these cities I went to, I wanted to spend more time in. Madrid is just such a huge place. We would go into the metro, the Madrid metro, and just emerge at a random stop, and it's like we would be in a different city every time we did it, exploring all kinds of new sites, new avenues, new little alleyways. You could spend a year in that place and still... have a lot to explore. But Barcelona, I have to say, is probably my favorite place because it just is such a city that's so filled with energy. And it's kind of reminds me of Amsterdam in some ways, except obviously a lot warmer and I guess maybe not as touristy and not as crazy as Amsterdam, but just very lively, very filled with music and with people who stay up all night long. That's the thing in Spain. people stay up all night long. That's one of the reasons I really like the place. They basically go out Friday, Saturday night, and they just really start having fun at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then they just keep going until dawn. It's kind of like, you know, a rave culture without the rave. And we made the mistake of staying at a place right in the main part of town where all the people hang out all night long. So literally, it's like Mardi Gras. If you happen to get a hotel in Mardi Gras land, you'll hear all the noise going on all night long. And of course, that's what you hear outside your window. It simply is unbelievable. I think there's a half hour period between like 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning where it's quiet. And then it just starts up again for the next day. I heard all kinds of craziness throughout the night. Throughout the night, just people yelling and screaming in all different languages, just going up and down. It would never stop. It would never stop. At one point, you watch South Park, right? You know the guy with the thing in his throat?
Yeah.
I don't know what you call those things.
I don't know either.
Yes.
Voice box.
Voice boxes, yeah. A guy had one of those and decided that he was going to start singing outside our window. Okay. Now, it really doesn't sound all that good. He had some kind of crazy guitar, and he had, he had this voice box thing, and it just was going on and on. It was like nails on a blackboard. And then after a while, I heard some woman who apparently had come out, and she started yelling at him, of course, you know, in Catalan, and which I didn't understand any of. And so they get into a big fight, and then other people get involved as well. There's a whole big thing going on. And then they just sort of fade away, and more people come in to take their place. That's what it's like. I wish I left the tape recorder on overnight. You would hear what it sounds like. If you like noise, I guess that's a place to go. One reason I did go to Barcelona was because everybody told me I'd get mugged there. Everybody told me I'd get robbed, and it's a horrible place to go. And when people say that, that just makes me want to go there all the more. Not because I want to get mugged, not because I like horrible places, because I think they're probably not seeing it in the right way. And yeah, if you go there and you look like a tourist and you're carrying all your bags and your money pocket or whatever, you might have a problem. It's quite possible. But if you suss out the situation, I think you'll have a really amazing time. It's weird. Barcelona is a very strange place. For some reason, they sell six packs of beer. Actually, they sell the cans. They sell the cans on the street for, I think, a euro each. They're standing there. These people just stand there. They're holding these six packs of beer that have the plastic thing around the middle of the can. And I don't know why people would go to them to buy beer when you could probably just go to any store and do it. But they're just everywhere. I've never seen that before. I've never seen that kind of, entrepreneurship or whatever. I even saw a cop walking around with a couple of these things. I don't know if he seized them or if he bought them. He was just casually walking down the street, and he had two of these cans of beer in his hand. It was just a very, very strange scene. They have a marketplace. A marketplace like I've never seen before. I don't know if you've ever been to any of these European marketplaces.
In Finland.
Yeah. Do they have the lamb's heads?
No.
And all kinds of live sea creatures and chickens, and it's just, it goes on forever and ever, and you just see things. You see parts of animals that you never would have thought that they could use, and it's basically people coming from all over the land and selling their goods there to restaurants, to people. It's a community in itself, and you can just spend an entire day wandering around there, and then you sit down, you have a cappuccino or something, and just go continue shopping afterwards. It's kind of like half indoors, half outdoors, kind of a big warehouse type of a place. I don't know how else to describe the place. It's simply incredible, and I'm sorry I haven't gone there before. Where else can I go? Pretty much seen all of Europe now. Haven't been to
Russia.
Greece. I've been to Russia.
You
haven't been to Greece yet.
Well,
I was in Russia last year, two years ago. And
Siberia.
Siberia is not.
That's not in Europe.
In
though.
Europe.
Yeah.
I've never been to Scotland, I don't think. And I've never been to San Marino. That's one of those tiny countries. Been to Andorra now. Andorra's a little tiny country.
Scandinavian countries?
All the Scandinavian countries. I've been to Denmark, been to Sweden, Finland, and Norway.
Is Iceland part of Europe?
Haven't been to Vatican City. That's technically another country, too. And, you know, I haven't spent enough time in Italy. And, you know, all these new Soviet republics that want to be part of the European Union, I guess I haven't been to them either, if they're if they want to be considered part of Europe. Belarus, I was there. Turkey, I haven't been to Turkey, and that's at least part of it's considered Europe. But I'm running out of places. Actually, this summer, right about the time of the next Hacker Congress, which we're going to talk about,
yeah.
I'm going to try something different. I'm going to try going back over there. And, in fact, I've been planning this for a number of years during the Trans-Siberian Express. What that is a train that goes all the way across Russia and winds up either in Vladivostok or Beijing in China. But I figure if I'm going to do that, I might as well extend it a bit and go all the way around the world. And, not only that, go all the way around the world without actually using an airplane. Yeah, so that involves taking a boat. And I'm looking into the logistics of this, taking a boat from here over to there, and then continuing on from there. But I'd like to do this at the same time as the next hacker conference. Now,
right.
What's this one called?
It's called What the Hack, and it's in the Netherlands. I think Den Bosch is the name.
Is that the name of it?
Near Den Bosch.
Go to the website right now.
And it's like the CCC camp you went to last year, in that it's outdoors. You bring a tent, you camp out, there's power, there's internet, there's all sorts of stuff.
I didn't bring a tent last time. Somebody gave me a tent.
Someone gave you a tent. I have a tent I'm going to bring.
Okay.
And I guess there's tents where they have the talks given. And so it's just this big open-air hacker conference.
What do you call the place?
Den Bosch.
That's right. That's right. That's very good. Den Bosch. D-E-N-B-O-S-C-H.
Yep.
Wow, and more information can be found at whatthehack.org. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. If you've never been to Europe before, that's a great way to see it for the first time. And if you've never been to a hacker conference, it's a great way to see one of those, too.
Yeah. Very strange kind of hacker conference, though.
Yeah, well, strange kind of people, too.
Yeah.
And you can believe that. But what I'd like to do, ideally, is somehow get over to Europe by using a boat. I don't mean just, you know, my own motorboat or anything like that. Probably, you know,
a sailboat.
Well, no, nothing quite so, no. You know, however they do it. I have to look into this. I still have to do a lot of research. So getting over there, I think that could be done. Then, obviously, getting to Holland, from Holland getting to Moscow, then getting on the Trans-Siberian, winding up either in Vladivostok or Beijing. And then from there, this is where it really gets kind of challenging, figuring out how to get across the Pacific Ocean. That's a very big one. I don't quite know what...
Why don't you sign on as the crew of a cargo ship?
That might wind up happening. It very well might wind up happening. So that's the tentative plans I have for this year. A lot of fun. And, of course, I'll be documenting it and hopefully be able to continue doing this show from over there as well. So, What the Hack. It takes place on July 28th through 31st over there in the Netherlands. One other thing I wanted to talk about, and then we can take some phone calls. Of course, you've been following the tsunami news.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Berlin when that happened. Actually, I was in Amsterdam when first reports came of the earthquake and some deaths from the tidal wave. But it's amazing how the death toll kept rising. You know, I was in Amsterdam, and I think it was something like 500 people by the time I got to Berlin on the train. It was over 10,000. And it just kept going up. And every time we'd come back from the conference, the CCC Congress, the death toll would have gone up by another 5 or 10,000.
Well, I mean, people have to report people missing and or dead for it.
I mean, they don't
want to just say 100,000 people and have no, you know.
I understand how they do it. I'm just amazed by how massive this thing really is. Because when you saw the video, if you can see the video of the wave.
Yeah, it looked nice.
It didn't look that big.
Yeah.
Didn't look that big. It looked like a wave. Okay, a bigger wave than usual, but just coming in. Okay, so what's the problem? The wave comes in, you just sort of stand up and let it pass. Well, that's the thing. It doesn't pass. It keeps hitting you, and it just... does not, it's relentless, does not let up, and that's what kills people, that's what drags people back into the ocean, that's what makes buildings collapse, that's what makes trees collapse, and it's something like we never have experienced before. That all could change, though. Apparently everybody over in Europe is aware of this, and we're not, as usual. But do you know that the nature is setting itself up for what is known as a mega tsunami? Basically, that will be triggered from a huge landslide on an island known as La Palma in the Canaries. Yeah, now, there's a volcano. I'm going to read you something here. 1949, the southern volcano on the island erupted. During the eruption, an enormous crack appeared across one side of the volcano as the western half slipped a few meters toward the Atlantic before stopping in its tracks. Although the volcano presents no danger while it is quiescent, scientists believe the western flank will give way completely during some future eruption on the summit of the volcano. So in other words, any time from now until the next couple of thousand years, a huge section of southern La Palma weighing 500,000 million tons, you can tell this is British because that's how they speak, 500,000 million tons, I imagine that's a billion tons, 500 billion tons, that will fall into the Atlantic Ocean. Now, what will happen when the volcano on La Palma collapses? Scientists predict that it will generate a wave that will be almost inconceivably destructive, far bigger than anything ever witnessed in modern times. It will surge across the entire Atlantic in a matter of hours, engulfing the whole U.S. East Coast, sweeping away everything in its path up to 20 kilometers inland. Boston will be hit first, followed by New York, all the way down the coast to Miami and the Caribbean. What do you think about that?
I hope it's not in a hurry to fall apart.
Well, you know, I'll answer some questions here. When will the volcano on La Palma collapse? Well, the collapse on the western flank of the Cumbre Vieja volcano on the southern half of La Palma is not going to happen tomorrow or next week. Tourists should not cancel their holidays to the Canary Islands or to the east coast of the United States or the Caribbean. What scientists are predicting is that the collapse is likely to happen any time within the next few thousand years. Scientists also know that a collapse will not happen without any warning. They will be able to alert people to possible danger several weeks in advance. What effects would the collapse have? Well, most of the energy of the wave would head straight out across the Atlantic towards the United States, Bahamas, and the Caribbean, but a smaller wave or waves would head in other directions too. All these waves would get smaller as they cross the Atlantic. However, scientists believe that they could still be as much as 50 meters high when they reach the east coast of the United States. Nothing can be done to stop the collapse. Scientists point out there is a lot that can be done to prevent loss of life when a collapse does eventually happen. You know, I know this is supposed to happen in a couple thousand years, maybe even as soon as a few hundred years, maybe even sooner. It still really bums me out that this is going to happen. You know, it bothers me because it means that New York City is going to be completely destroyed.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wanted to stick around. You know, we have ancient Roman cities that have been around for thousands of years. Why can't we have our city be around for thousands of years? How can we stop this thing? All right, maybe we're safe, but, you know, we're going to be buried somewhere. I'll bet our bodies are going to be, like, cast aside and everything's going to be destroyed.
Tsunami-reinforced buildings.
So much for resting in peace. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be horrible. They say this wave is going to be so big that by the time it hits, it won't even have crested. You know how a wave crests hits the shore? This is just going to be continuing to rise. That's how big it is. And it's because of the Canary Islands. What have the Canary Islands ever done for anybody? 631-632-9872 is our phone number. This is the call for you to call. If you're outside the country, of course, the country code is 1, because we are number 1. 631-632-9872. Let us know what you think of mega tsunamis or guns or Europe or anything else that's happening. The Iraqi elections, they're coming up. Yeah. Oh, boy, what fun that's going to be.
I hope they keep them better protected than some of the other officials in Iraq.
You know, what they're telling people to do is basically line up outside the election polling places for hours, just like the policemen that keep getting killed. Who in their right mind is going to do this? And to vote for somebody who's actually going to have power? I don't think so. All right, let's take a couple of phone calls. 631-632-9872. And good evening, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Good to have you back.
Well, thanks. Where are you calling from?
Smithtown.
Smith, he sounds like you're in Echo Land.
Well, that's only because with the radio on, I am.
Ah, okay. Well, sounds kind of pleasant, actually.
It's good to have you back. I don't always agree with you. I've called you before, but I didn't realize I missed you until you were back on.
Until I was back on? You didn't realize when I was gone that you missed me?
I didn't realize. You're sitting here bragging about your European escapades and whatnot. I did. I assume a lot of us missed you.
Well, it's good to hear that. It's good to hear. Did I miss anything?
For political irreverence. It's just not calculating to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even... I mean, if you were to give me a set of about 1,000 well-weighted and fine-tuned darts, I couldn't hit the Canary Islands.
Yeah, well, they're going to hit us, though.
I mean, how is a tiny little island like that going to be responsible for all that?
Well, it's because it's 500 million thousand, or whatever they call it, tons, that's going to fall into the ocean at once, and what that does is it creates a huge splash. I guess that's the most non-technical way I can refer to it. And that splash is just going to, you can demonstrate this in a bathtub very easily, just by dropping something in there.
I'm about 7 minutes away from a nice bath.
All right. Well, when you're in that bath, just drop a big rock or something inside there, and being careful, of course, and imagine that you live on the other side of the bathtub and see what happens.
Well, it's good to have you back, no matter what wave is coming.
All right. Well, hopefully it won't come anytime soon.
Have a good one, and make fun of George W. a little bit.
All right, I'll try, but, it sort of writes itself. Thanks. Thanks for your call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Good to have you back.
Thanks. Where are you calling from?
Right now I'm in Westbury.
Westbury, Nassau County.
Nassau County,
and
yeah,
the signal's coming in good over there.
Oh, yeah, loud and clear.
Nice.
What I wanted to do was talk to you about the guns.
Okay. The guns.
Like you, I love to travel, been all over the place, got a lot of places to go to, under my belt. And what I wanted to mention to you is anytime you want to go, I'm a hunter and I'm a gun enthusiast, all right? Gun nut, even if you will. I don't care. If you want to go shooting anytime, I'll take you to the range. I'll take you and your buddy. We'll go to the range. We'll shoot all day.
So many people have made me that offer. it's like religion almost. They say, you just got to do it and you'll be convinced, And I appreciate the offer. I really do.
I got AR-15, all the good stuff.
Yeah. Now, you shoot at targets or you shoot at running animals?
Well, I'm a hunter too, but not very successful. But I do. I'm primarily a target hunter. Uh-huh. A target shooter, rather.
Uh-huh.
One thing I did want to mention to you is there are a couple of places on eastern Long Island that are very, I guess, regimented when it comes to when you can shoot, when you can't shoot. Most places are very, very strict. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's not like you just pull up to a place, unload your trunk, and start shooting at things. Those
right.
days are gone.
Right.
Pretty regimented, and it's not is I guess what's what I'm looking for. Willy nilly. I don't know. It's not as lax as.
Right, it's that mayhem, people shooting at anything that moves.
It's not.
It's because wildlife is kind of running out.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's one of the reasons.
Right, and when it comes to when you were talking before about the pistols, a lot of people do, believe it or not, I myself hunt with a pistol. You can do it. Now, most that whole a pistol is mainly for shooting another person. That's rubbish. A lot of people hunt with a pistol.
What?
I hunt with a pistol.
What kind of animal do you hunt with a pistol?
And a bow and arrow. Sorry?
What kind of animal can you hunt with a pistol?
Well, if you're sitting down...
you hunt sitting down?
Well, no, I'm saying if you're sitting down, what I'm about to tell you might pretty much knock you on your
behind. Oh, okay. No, I'm sitting down. Red Hack, you're sitting down, right? Okay.
You can actually hunt an elephant with a pistol, and it has been done. But primarily... People hunt white-tailed deer.
Well, you shouldn't be hunting elephants. If you see one around here, definitely don't hunt it.
Okay, well, that means you wouldn't be in this country, then, is what I was getting at.
Yeah.
But you can hunt deer. You can hunt anything with a pistol. Okay. Cape buffalo, animal that weighs 3,000 pounds, 2,000 pounds, you can take down with a pistol. All right? It's not a .22 or anything like that. It's a large bore pistol. And
uh-huh.
It's been done.
Uh-huh.
But I, myself, primarily hunt deer. With a pistol.
Huh. All right, good to know.
I think they appreciate it, though, if you hunt them with shotguns more because it makes the suffering not last quite as long.
Well, I don't know about that.
I also hunt with the bow and arrow as well.
You know, bows and arrows, they're kind of scary, too, because they don't make any noise.
No, they don't. That's the whole idea behind it.
Yeah, I guess so. But they are kind of big and cumbersome, and, you don't have, bows and arrows you can stick in your pocket.
Yeah, that's true. You climb a tree, you sit in a tree for 8 hours in all kinds of stupid weather, and wait for something to walk by.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much what it is. Like I said, anytime you want to go, you know, to the range, I'm more than willing, because I like to, you know, introduce other people to the sport, hobby, uh-huh. whatever you want to call it.
Well, I appreciate it.
You know, the only thing is, what else I wanted to say? About your travels, you've actually got two or three countries more that I've actually got to work with.
Okay, which ones?
I've never been to Greece.
Okay.
And I just come back from Iceland. Iceland's a hoot.
Iceland, yes.
I mentioned Iceland. You didn't. You
Iceland's
ignored
a hoot.
Well, yeah, I've been to Iceland, but I haven't actually gone to. I mean, it's basically a transfer point on an airplane.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I found it expensive to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, inexpensive to get there, but expensive once you got here.
Yes, everything is very expensive there.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. It was one of those places that you know, it was just cheap. I think I paid on what was it? Icelandair, I think it was. Believe it or not, it was $100 each way. Okay, and I had a friend of mine wanted me to visit her in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and it was like $600. So I said, "Honey, I'm going to Europe. I'll see you later." That's pretty much what happened.
And is it like being in Europe when you're there?
There is a European feel to it. Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
And it just so it helped that I had just come back from Europe about 3 months prior, so it was just, you know, like going back again. And I enjoyed myself. I learned a lot. I saw a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably go back. I've heard people say I'd never go back there again. But any time I get a chance to get on an airplane and go someplace that's not here,
yeah,
I'm done. I'm gone.
Makes sense.
You know, but...
All right, listen, thanks for your call. I've got to try to move on to some others.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, take care. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wading River.
Oh, you got some big echo out there, too.
I got to turn down the FM radio.
Yeah, turn down the FM radio there.
All right.
631-632-9872 is our phone number. What's on your mind?
I just want to tell you a couple of statistics that I read about the tsunami wave.
Okay.
It was a couple of items on the ticker on the bottom of the screen from the news channel. The tsunami had 9.5, it was as powerful as 9.5
million atomic bombs.
1,000 atomic bombs.
1,000? Okay, I might be off by a digit.
The Earth wobbled on its axis as a result of the 9.0 earthquake, and as a result, our days are shorter.
By 2.68 microseconds.
All right.
I think it might be milliseconds.
I'm pretty sure it's microseconds.
What's the difference between a microsecond and a millisecond?
About 1,000.
Okay.
Hour of 1,000.
All right. I learned something today.
And from what I understand, the water in San Diego, California, went up about 10 inches at the time of the wave.
I didn't hear about that. That's so it actually had an effect on the coastline here.
Well, to your friend who was wondering how something from so far away and so seemingly small could affect us on this coast,
mm-hmm.
You could see even over on the west coast that was affecting all the way over there. And to give an idea, that wasn't even any water displacement caused by a landslide.
Yeah.
So imagine what the magnitude would be if San Diego could be affected on that level.
Well, I mean, it just makes you think the power of nature will continually outgun anything that mankind can come up with. I mean, think of all those atomic bombs. This thing just basically put them to shame. You know, one earthquake can do this.
This is a humbling experience.
Yeah.
And one other thing I wanted to address, which I have to say I have some concern about, is these terrorists doing something to activate this over there in West Africa.
You're talking about the Canary Islands?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I had the exact same thought. What if Al-Qaeda used a dirty nuke on the Canary Islands and forced the landslide to happen and triggered the mega tsunami?
Right, and if
uh-huh.
if the power of an eruption is all that's needed, I'm sure it would not be hard to fabricate something just as great in power.
It's definitely something that I'm now going to be staying up nights worrying about.
I think we would all go crazy if we did that.
Well, I plan on doing just that, but thanks so much for your call.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
You too. Take care. And, you know, I can't help but notice all of our calls have come from Long Island so far. Does that mean the internet stream is down? Let's see if anybody out there can call us in the next couple of minutes and prove that it is not. But, yeah, you know, now it's something to really be worried about. I think the U.S. military needs to guard the Canary Islands against a possible Al-Qaeda incursion.
Yeah.
You know, where they could cause all kinds of mayhem.
Or maybe we could get our scientists working on imploding it instead of...
I don't think there's anything you can do. I don't think there's anything you can do. It's going to happen. Mega tsunami. Oh, just the thought of it. And, you know, I had plenty to worry about before this whole thing happened, but now it's just, you don't know where to stop.
Yeah.
All right, we're just about out of time. And I don't know if we're going to get that net call, because the call for it won't go out for another minute or so. That's when people actually get the signal. Red Hack, why don't you... give us some closing thoughts or
closing
advice
thoughts.
Or anything that you'd like to say, because usually there's so many people in the studio at the other radio show.
Yeah, I know. It's
and now it's just
very,
you.
Very awkward.
Yeah.
I don't have any closing thoughts.
You don't have any closing thoughts?
I can't think of any. I'm tired. That's my closing
thought. You got 1 hour of sleep last night.
Yes.
Because you were programming.
Yes.
We're writing programming for the 2600 website. Which,
yeah.
That's was one of the many people that... sacrifice their lives for the cause.
Yep.
So we're going to do Canada this weekend. Is that the deal?
Canada sounds good.
All right. And
I want to drive one of those smart cars, too.
Well, we all do. We all do. And if you want to see how cool the smart car is, smart.com. I'm looking for the little tiny two-seater car. And I hope to be bringing one of those things back to this country somehow.
You know what? We forgot to bring up the wings issue.
The wings. We're going to get wings. Yeah, yes. Because not Toronto wings, but Buffalo is a city that's sort of on the way. Mm-hmm. And they have been known to invent the buffalo wing.
We have a little bit of a wager going, I'd say.
And you have a place.
I have a place nearby. It's in I think, Yonkers, New York.
Uh-huh.
It's called the Candlelight Inn, and I maintain that they have the best wings.
And I have a place in Buffalo called the Anchor Bar, which I think might have even invented the wings.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. But I guess we do have a bit of a wager as far as figuring out what the best ones are. So we're going to hit one on the way up. And one on the way down, and I guess...
report back.
May the better wing win. We'll be back again next week. Well, I'll be back again next week. Red Hack will be on tomorrow night on the other show.
Yep.
And I guess write to us, otw@2600.com. We look forward to your letters and contributions, things like that. Be back again next week. Stay safe. Good night.
Hi, this is Abel Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.